of this great effort to help keep our city beautiful. I'm Rosemary Frank, and that's City Minute. Thank you for joining us.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll.
Or do you call the roll?
I don't need
no
to.
No call. Well, this is a work session about the Providence Road Improvement Project. Some of you have heard of that. Mr. Manager, you want to pass it on?
Well said. No, just briefly, we've prepared this this next 4 hours to really dig as deeply as you want to dive into the project, the history, any specific elements. This is your time. We're as prepared as we can be with it. You do have a packet handed out as well, which is some background from the third interested parties meeting held recently. And I think the intent today is to bring the folks who have been deeply involved in it, Scott and John, to really walk through all of the options we have before us. And just as a refresher, the current item that you'll have to deal with at the next meeting is whether or not you want to rescind the decision that was made in November. And so that is what we'll be referring to today is option 9, I think.
Yep.
And so that's one decision ahead of you, whether or not to do that. If you don't, then fine, the decision will stand and we'll implement. If you do, then we'll have to figure out what you want to do instead.
Just to be clear, Monday night we will vote on whether or not to rescind. If the vote to rescind fails, then the November, was it 19th, 2012 ordinance will stand.
That's correct. And we'll walk through that.
But if it fails, we will not be coming up with a backup solution. We will basically re-engage the process and move forward.
You mean if we rescind?
If we rescind, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes. There's no established alternative at that point. We will need you to choose one at some point. And so there'll be a report on to start that process. But you won't do that at the next meeting. That'll come after. And there is, you know, the only sense of urgency from the staff side is there is one of the funding sources that it does have a time clock on it. And so we hate to give it back to the state. And we have plenty of other needs, as you're well aware. So I don't think that's a real concern. But we do need to have some clarity about this project to know what we'll do with those funds.
And that funding source can be used for something else.
That's right.
Not earmarked.
Absolutely. So with all that as just context, I'm going to turn it over and we'll walk through the presentation today. And I believe every question you might have is answered in the presentation. I have read through it a couple times, but please ask them as you have them and we'll jump around as we need to. So with that, John, would you like to start us off?
What you have in front of you is the raw data, the comments directly as they were submitted to us. From the interested parties meeting and the percentages of what people thought they would like to proceed with. So that's the raw data from that meeting. We'll get started. The criteria needed, of course, the biggest problem is the Providence traffic through movement, vehicle and pedestrian. And once you have that problem, then you also have access problems with the grasslands and the university.
Let me just jump in, and I'm going to feel free to do this as we go through, so fair warning. The other way to think about this slide is, you know, what problem are we trying to solve? And that's always a good question to come back to, I think. So what is it we really, what brought us to the table in the first place? And for me, it's that first bullet, you know, it's the traffic on Providence. And I think we've got some good background to show you here on why we feel like that's a problem to solve. If you address that issue, these other two things are elements you have to address as well because they're, you know, connected. So with that.
And so we're going to look at a video of the problem. This is the intersection of Stadium Boulevard. Providence is back to the north. So as you see, you're going to see right turn movements over in this lane peel out and go west on Stadium, and then you're going to see a big gap in traffic to where cars could be going through if there is a right turn lane. So that's lost capacity and through movement is what we call it in traffic engineering terms. And so as you see, these pull out, there's at least one, two, three cars that was in this lane that could have made it through the intersection. And so that's happened twice just in this video. So that's six lost cars that we could have got through had we had a right turn lane.
Let me recalculate. There were nine cars that turned right and nine cars that went through the intersection in the right turn lane.
But I could have had 18 go through. I had
no,
a big
I'm just
gap.
Saying so, that yes. A lot of cars
yes.
are turning right.
Yes.
As many, in, at least in this limited sample, were
right.
turning right as we're going through in the right turn lane.
Right. So as we look again, the same kind of slide. We're out in the lane here. And this is looking north up Providence. And you can see both through lanes are filled with cars. What we're looking at, when you, we talk about, we're going to talk about delineators a little bit in these 10 options, and where they're located is along this line right here, this yellow line. And so those delineators would be put in along this line, come through and right to this line. What that does then is shift these two lanes of traffic to the east. This lane would come along down through this way. This lane would shift over in this, and then this western lane would become the right turn lane. So when we're talking about delineators, that's what we're talking about doing.
When you talk about delineators, it's those ugly yellow things that never last more than a week.
Yes, ma'am. And so as you see in this picture, you have two cars coming down this, what we call a two-way left turn lane. What they're doing is they're proceeding on down to get in these two left turn lanes on Stadium, which is highly unsafe. We have pedestrians that cross. We'll show that video in a minute. And so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about delineators. And this is the problem, is the traffic stacking on Providence.
So just to confirm, I'm pretty sure everybody's well aware of this one. I think we're all well acknowledge that this occurs, and we've probably been in that line ourselves many times.
One of the things in the presentation I'm looking for is those criteria for which delineators are present, which are the possibilities, because it's apparently delineators are not required in all of them.
Right.
And you will make that clear to us, I'm sure. Okay.
And this is not an all-day problem. This is just a specific time frame, mostly evening rush hour from 4.
PMP.
Because I've been
And that's, you know, and I'll just.
What does that mean?
Well, it means it's from about.
It usually starts around 3:30 p.m. It doesn't back up this far all the time, but you have different big releases. The public schools let out. And then when everybody lets out at 4 or 5 o'clock from the university and downtown areas is when that happens. So the p.m. peak hour in that 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. time slot. And the longest delays are from around 5 to 5:30.
And what happens on game days? Or will you get to that in its place?
We try not to design for that. We know it happens, but you know you can't just design for 6 days a year, basically, is how we look at that. It's going to happen.
But it's a, yeah, it's a big spike, yeah. As you know. I think the work
You're
session
probably breaking
is,
them, but go ahead. What was your question?
Session is for the council to work on it, but I.
But what was your question?
Basketball games.
It's the same. I mean, it's not as extensive as football, but they have problems.
Yeah, there's one fifth of the seating capacity in the, and there's not tailgating really external. So there, it's smaller. Traffic issue in general, although it's certainly gets focused on this intersection.
So this is looking from the north. This is the tail end of that problem, which is Rollins Road over the hill around the corner. So we have pedestrians in the next where they think they're safe, when actually, if you remember that car trying to get down that left turn lane, may not see them, may pull out and not pay attention. And so there is issues with that, and this car is trying to get out, and it's blocked, basically. Here's another video of looking at it, and what you're going to see is down here, kind of in the bottom of the throes there, where my hand is, there's going to be pedestrians trying to cross this area.
Probably dating myself, but I'm probably go back to, is that not considered jaywalking when you don't cross the designated intersection? We not have police officers down there ticketing people who are standing obstructing traffic and creating a hazard for both themselves and the driver?
Well, we would need 10 officers on college to do that. I know that.
Well, really, but it only takes a couple of times for people to know they're going to get a ticket.
I think that it's probably not illegal to do that. There's if you walk through a linear and extension of a sidewalk at a signalized or unsignalized intersection, that's a legal crosswalk.
Okay.
They're not always marked or signed or signalized, but they're still legal crossings. I think jaywalking would be like downtown Columbia, where you've got a signal at 8th Street, you got a signal at 9th Street, and they're walking mid-block. That's what jaywalking technically is.
And the other thing is there's a long stretch there where there are marked crosswalks. Right. From from Stadium, where's the next marked crosswalk?
Rollins.
It's a, how long is that, a half a mile?
Probably closer to a quarter mile.
And that really describes that our pedestrian concerns here is
right.
They're crossing two parking lots, two back and forth between fraternities, sororities, and there are things they shouldn't do that they do, and we try to enforce those rules, although catching that's very difficult.
And so if we put delineators down where I showed you, that's not going to stop that condition. And so, mm-hmm. That doesn't help the pedestrians at all. The other thing in this picture, you see these two cars to the right where those houses are. This is Bingham. And so these are the five houses that are rentals, basically. These cars back into traffic, which is a very unsafe condition. There's no way to fix that. And so, as you saw with the line of traffic, they're very unsafe at backing into traffic.
By being unsafe, how many accidents have we had from that?
Well, I'm going to get there. I've got a list of all that. And so as Ms. Nauser pointed out, this is, a peak hour, p.m. peak hour condition, and I'm going to show you some projects. This is 81,500 goes through this intersection every day. Broadway and Stadium, the nearest one count is 56,000. So it's the busiest intersection we have in the city of Columbia.
How many of them are going east to west, and how many of them are going north to south?
Well, I can tell you on the leg we're working on is about 23,000 or 28,000 cars.
On the right lane?
Well, I don't know about the right turns. Do you have the right turns?
But it's both right turns and
that's true. All of it.
Yeah, there's 81,500 cars per day that enter the intersection.
And then on
whatever direction that they're
going. Going north and south.
So
and east and west.
Both.
Right.
That's all of it.
What was the 28,000 number, John?
The 28,000 is the north leg.
Coming in from the north.
That's both directions.
Ah.
It's both directions, north and south.
So something like 15,000 enter from that direction and exit from that direction.
So most of the traffic isn't east and west?
Of it's north-south. Yeah, I think there's actually a little bit
more. Well, you said 28,000 north and south.
That would imply 53,000 east and west.
Right, 53,000 east.
That's not necessarily the case, because if you look at the south leg of that intersection, it even has more traffic than the north leg, because there's a lot of northbound traffic. When they get to Stadium, they either go left or right.
So the 28 is just north of Stadium.
Yeah, that's just if you take a slice across Providence and just count every car that goes across that.
Oh, so it's northbound and southbound traffic
at this
north of Stadium.
Yes.
Got it.
So
is it half and half then? Half of it's going north, half of it's going south? The workers
yeah,
are about 14,000 cars.
Or it's close to south.
14 are going south, entering the intersection, going right and going straight through, and going left too, right?
Yes.
And so we had some projects to take care of just those what you're talking about, Ms. Nauser. PM peak is what we dealt with out here on Scott. And so that was an $11 million project for 15,000 cars a day. We're doing currently Broadway and Stadium, that area between I-70 and Broadway is a $13 million project to handle those cars. We did Mexico Gravel for 4,000 cars at $2.5 million. And we also did something on McGuire-Lamone area for 2,600 cars a day. We did a $7 million project. And all those are PM peak problems, the same problem we have, the same hours that you're talking about at Stadium in Providence. We also have over on College a new project that we're actually interviewing for consultants today, about a $700,000 pedestrian enhancement project with MoDOT to kind of funnel the pedestrians where we want them. We're looking at, that's a barrier that you're looking at down College Avenue. And we're looking at, we got pedestrian crossings here at University. We're looking at two mid-block, and then there's one down at Rollins. And so we're continuing to have to deal with pedestrians just all over the city. And so this
How much is that?
It's about $700,000 just for pedestrian access alone.
And that barrier is going to look like?
We don't know. It's currently being designed. What we're trying to work with is the university has money in it as well.
Right.
And we're looking at something like a curbing. It's not going to be the barrier that you see on South Providence, but we would like to have something like a red brick or a white brick bottom with maybe a wrought iron fence down the middle. The university doesn't want plantings because we don't want to have to get out there and maintain those plantings. So we're looking at something on that that fits in maybe with the White Campus and also East Campus or East.
East Campus is talking about some greenery in that.
So we're working with them as well. But it's about pedestrians crossing in that area because, again, they stand in the middle of the street just like over on Providence and think they're safe. Here's the injury data. Any injuries a concern to us. We don't consider these astronomical for a four-year period, but it's a concern. We also had three pedestrian.
These are Providence Road.
These are Providence Road. All Providence Road. Some at Stewart, some at Turner, Rollins. Every intersection up through there you'll see is listed.
And the way those work, the police department, whenever there's a collision, they log the collision to the closest intersection to give it a point of reference. So if it was, somebody that was in a rear-end collision due to one of the traffic signals, but it was, say they were backed up to Bingham and there was a rear-end collision at that location due to the backup at Stadium Boulevard, they would log that collision as at the intersection with Bingham and Providence. So it doesn't identify the cause of the collisions. It just gives a reference point of where they occurred, the closest intersection.
And we this did, is car, right? This is not car, bike, or carped.
But we did have two pedestrian, or three pedestrian incidents, one or two at Stewart and one at Burnham. So they're not listed on here, but these are vehicular. But we did have three pedestrians.
And are people calling in for all collisions? I remember at some point police weren't responding to non-injury collisions. So how are we getting all of them?
These are reported incidents. So there are some incidents that occur that motorists just handle between themselves and turn it into their insurance. These are the ones that the police department actually wrote a report on.
This is five-year data. How does this compare with injuries north of this on Providence Road?
It would be similar.
So really, this is not an outlier from the rest of Providence Road.
I would say that's a correct statement.
And so in March of this year, we had an interested parties meeting because of the public hearing that was requested. So we wanted to get all the information out. And we asked for this form, which you have everything that was listed that was sent, given to us or sent by email. And so I'm going to turn it over to Scott Bitterman, our street division manager, to go through the 10 options and explain what's in each option. So,
before we do, I know back in 2010 the preferred option was the Turner-Burnham signals with the Birch Road connector and the delineators from that last interested party meeting. Do you have the breakdown of the options from that interested party meeting by any chance, or could obtain those?
That data could be mined. I don't have it with me today.
Okay, because I'd be curious to see, because that was the preferred.
What was that one? That was intersections at?
It was the lights at Turner Burnham, and then it used Birch as the connector. And again, it had the delineators and, you know, limited access.
Birch.
Birch option.
Right. That was the 2010 interested party meeting.
That was
the
preferred
option.
From us.
Was that interested party meeting attended by Grasslands residents, too?
Yes.
It was attended by.
So that was the 2010 option?
That was our preferred at that time. Yeah. That was the, not the Grasslands preferred.
Right. Well, the Grasslands haven't preferred anything other than the new one.
They hadn't said anything at that point. Is that right?
Yeah, they had said plenty. They didn't like any of the options.
Well, that would probably be an unfair characteristic, too, because I'm sure there were people in the subdivision. It wasn't, I don't know if it was necessarily a total consensus, but.
We couldn't get a consensus, I'll just say.
Right. Right. But I mean, it would be interesting to see what the people who attended that interested party meeting.
And that's why we never brought it forward, is because we couldn't get a big consensus of which.
Because at that time, when I was on the council, they said I'd rather have no option than.
Right.
Than the option you have, and so.
And that option had the right turn lane extending to Brandon or all the way down to Bingham?
Well, I believe it had it to Brandon. Yeah.
We were doing delineators, bringing it all the way back up with that left turn lane. Well, I'm going to let Scott talk about it. So.
Have the mouse. Yeah. So this past March, we had another interested parties meeting to look at all the options that were on the table or had been looked at any point since, you know, 2005 or so when we started looking at improvement projects. So this is just an overview. It just shows all the different areas that we would look at a project. So what we called option one would be a traffic signal at the intersection of Providence and Rollins. And with this option, we would provide access to the east side of the roadway at Rollins. There would be one-way streets on Rollins and on 5th Street. And then the access to the west side would be an extension of Rollins Road to Clarkson. The yellow here shows the new pedestrian path that was recently constructed to show approximately where that option would tie in. It included the improvement to Birch Street because of the changes in traffic. And then it also has this heavier red line here are the delineators that John spoke about previously. So in most of these early options, the way that the southbound right turn lane is gained is by putting those delineators on that center turn lane and turning it into a through lane.
But so does there it also have another right turn? Is there construction down below
there
Brandon?
Is not.
So none of this involves, this does not involve any widening of Providence other than
correct.
Just drawing lines?
Correct, yes. So there are three southbound through lanes, but it's the same existing three lanes that are out there. One of them is the center turn lane, and then the other two lanes. And then the cost of this option was $2.7
million. Now, where that road comes in, is it taking land out of a park?
Up here?
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, in there.
Over in here?
Is part of that a park?
Yes, I believe it is.
Scott, what's happening at Burnham on this option? Is there a left out at Burnham or not?
No. For lefts out, they would come up to Clarkson and then go up to the traffic signal to make their left turn.
Is it signalized?
It is not.
Burnham is not signalized here.
Rollins is the only signal in this scenario between Stewart and Stadium Boulevard.
I have a question on the delineators. Is there a option other than delineators in terms of a concrete medium with more durable and attractive posts or something like that?
Well, the delineators that you're most used to seeing, for instance, on Broadway in front of Walgreens, those are placed right on the roadway, like right on the double yellow line. To make them a little bit more durable, what we've proposed is a 6-inch tall curb that's 12 inches wide. It would sit right on that yellow line, and then we'd put the delineators on top of that. So we think that they would be more durable than the ones that we use as a true temporary nature, but
that's,
you know,
more aesthetic
still,
wise. Is,
yeah,
there something
aesthetic
that
wise,
could be,
you have a,
it's going to be 12 feet wide at the base. Why could it not taper up into, I mean, it doesn't have to be
like a jersey barrier?
Yeah.
Well, no, like, you know, like
something
attractive.
A little more
you suggested something on college that the
right.
University might be contributing to as well, with something with wrought iron, something like that. I mean, that's.
Well, that's in a 10-foot span. Is what
okay.
We're working with on college. We're working with a 1-foot window. So, you know, there's probably something out there, but with a, you know, 1-foot width, you know, the delineators themselves are about, you know, 4 inches wide, so you don't have a whole lot of room there to work with.
But even if it was only a foot, I mean, they have where you can stamp concrete and make it look like it's brick. I mean, so there's probably more desirable aesthetic options than just the yellow sticks out there in the middle of the street. If we really wanted to look at it, if it's the reason the delineators aren't liked, it's because it's pretty much aesthetics,
mm-hmm.
is really what it comes down to.
You know, vines have become pretty popular around the country, too.
Yep.
When you have a very narrow space, you can plant vines. They grow. They don't take any maintenance.
And exactly, and it's a visual. Yeah. That
almost
happen.
Like a single fence.
Yeah.
Okay.
They would be hit. I mean, whatever we put out there is going to be... The flexible delineators are fairly cheap to replace, where if it was some sort of iron fencing or something, we would be out there all the time replacing whatever we put out there with that limited space. I would recommend the flexible delineators just because I think that would be the easiest thing to maintain and the most cost-effective.
Well, it's
not
in accordance with the H3 Charette recommendations for Providence Road. The delineators would not be a gateway entrance appearance at all. We'd have to totally ignore that.
Yeah, the vehicle lanes, I mean, we're kind of squished in there. There should be 4 vehicle lanes in that 50-foot width, and we've squeezed 5 vehicle lanes in that area. So we're squeezing it even further, saying that 12 inches that used to be a line where cars could, you know, their tires could get on it and such is unusable. So, I mean, really, if we have 5 lanes, the roadway should be at a minimum of 60 feet wide to get 12-foot lanes in there if we were designing something today. But we've got basically 10-foot lanes in there right now, so
and
it's really tight.
So is it 50 feet? Is that curb
yeah,
inside
from,
of curb?
From the face of curb to the face of curb is 50 feet.
50 feet.
Any other questions on this particular slide? Option number 2, we call that one Turner to Clarkson. It's similar to the last one, except for the traffic signal is at Turner instead of an extension of Rollins. In this option, the traffic signal at Rollins would be removed and a new signal would be placed at Turner. The intersection at Burnham would be similar, so we would focus all of the left turns from the west side, again up Clarkson, and then to a signal at Turner. The university side would also have access to Providence at Turner. And then it again has the flexible yellow delineator option on the leg of Providence in order to gain that southbound right turn lane. The changes into the neighborhood would be with Birch. $2.8 million is the cost option for this particular one. The third option we looked at was Rollins to Burnham. With this option, you'd have a signalized intersection at Rollins, and then there would be a connector road that's built down to Burnham. So Burnham, in essence, would go up to the signal with Rollins. On the university side, you would have one-way streets on Rollins and on 5th Street in order to make this traffic signal efficient for the east side. And then a lot of the components are similar then. You would have the flexible yellow delineators on Providence. You would have Birch Street improved.
I don't want to get ahead here, but do any of these options put more concrete down there between Burnham and Stadium?
Not till you get to option 9.
Okay.
And on this one, Scott, you just block off Burnham, the current alignment of Burnham coming out of the neighborhood?
Yes.
And this one destroys the fraternity front yard?
The roadway would go through, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Rollins intersection lights weren't preferable with the university because it changes their traffic patterns from what they wanted. Is that correct? They wanted Rollins to be more pedestrian and Turner to be the vehicular
correct.
Access.
Based on our input from the university, they don't prefer any of the options with a signal at Rollins. And the reason is there's such a short throat length to the signal. In order to make that work efficiently, you really need to make some one-way couples here so that 5th Street would feed the signal, and then traffic exiting the signal would go up Rollins. The reasons for that are, in order to make all the traffic go through one traffic signal, you have to have dual left turn lanes on Providence. So those dual left turn lanes would come down, and then they would go on Rollins. And then the lanes that feed it, there would be two lanes on 5th Street. And that keeps us from having to widen 5th Street and Rollins as well. And then the cost option for this is $1.3 million. Option 4 is called Garth to Clarkson. In this option, you would extend Garth Street down to Clarkson. And in this option, we wouldn't change anything on Providence Road. So there hasn't been a lot of support for this particular option. It doesn't improve anything on Providence per se. There's no improvements out here for pedestrians or to decrease the delay of the through traffic on Providence. The only thing this option does is it provides a way for this neighborhood to go up Garth Street and get onto Stewart so that they could have a signalized access to Providence Road.
Wasn't that that Garth to Clarkson connection originally a pedway that neighborhood in the Stewart area was not in favor of at all, even for a pedway? So that's where we got the alternative connectors?
I believe that's right. We haven't had any support for this option. Option 5 would be a connection to Stadium Boulevard. It could either be done through one of the two roads down here, either LaGrange or Brandon. So, $1.5 to $1.6 million to get an access to the existing traffic signal at Cary Frankie and Stadium Boulevard. So with this option, again, we don't do anything to Providence. We basically leave it alone and just try to find access to a traffic signal at a location down on Stadium Boulevard.
I have two questions on this. How many houses, if any, do you have to take out to do 5A and 5B? And what would you do to mitigate cut-through traffic?
Yeah, there would be one to two houses that would need to be acquired in order to make this option happen. And then there would be, I think one of the biggest reasons that there hasn't been a lot of support for this option is that this really would, in essence, become the quickest way for a right turn on the Stadium Boulevard. And, rather than waiting all that traffic, you just make your right turn on Burnham and come down through the neighborhood and get up to Stadium Boulevard through this signal. So you would have to do a series of speed humps or directional traffic. You would have to make some adjustments in order to keep that.
And if we went back to that 81,000 cars and broke them down by which direction they're entering and which direction they exit, we could come up with some number for what this potential cut through would be, which I would imagine would be large.
Yeah, I would anticipate a cut through problem that we would deal with in the future if we enact this option.
This question doesn't really go here, but I just thought of it, and that is, We haven't really talked about the rate of growth of traffic at this intersection and what the projections are, and that may be something to come to at the end when you've gone through all the options.
Were there any other questions on this option? Option six, yes.
Do you have rate of growth projections?
It's generally about 2% per year.
And based on?
Just historical growth. There hasn't been, you know, since 2008 and the economic downturn, the growth rates have been pretty flat. But before that, it was about 2% per year for, you know, several
decades. And that's generally
expected
to go forever or a decade, 20 years?
Our long-range CATSO model, we've seen 2% per year is kind of the general growth rate, which is pretty common practice.
Because, I mean, and part of it is as Southwest continues to grow, we can kind of guarantee that this is going to be a pressure point given the lack of connectivity between Southwest Columbia. You know, almost everything comes through here.
And it's our major north-south artery.
I'm going to bring up something that's a little tangential, but our ability to come up with a policy to get students near campus will dictate some of this traffic, because if we fail to find a way to get higher density student developments next to campus, they will be south, they will be on Grindstone, and they'll either get to Grindstone by going down Rockquarry Road or this route. So again, the rate of growth is related to what else we do with the policy.
And that ties into transit and how successful we are with that.
And I would contend the rate of growth is related to a lot of different policies and practices that we could consider.
That's actually right. Even in terms of the comprehensive plan, there are some factors in that plan that we will be reviewing at some point that it differs in some respects to the CATSO rate of growth model. So,
and at the end of the day, of course, it's just our best guess. And we know for a fact we'll be wrong. But we try to get as close as we can because it does matter. You know, you want to try to be prepared for it in an average case scenario.
So wrong is better than very wrong.
Exactly. Our hope is that we're just a little wrong. So we feel good, for example, when we make a budget that's 1% off on revenue, which we've been, and that's tremendous. You know, when you think about how many billions we're talking about, well, in our case, hundreds of millions. And in this case, it's very similar, and I will just share a metaphor that really helps me think about traffic. It really does. The best metaphor I've found is really water and water pressure, you know, and because we don't have many pipes, the pressure of that water is very huge. And so as you add other pipes, the pressure lessens and the flow goes down. So it's so a lot of traffic engineers spend time on adding other, you know, methods to get from south to the north. So it would, whether it be, you know, wider lanes or more streets. But if you don't have that option or don't want that option, because there are negatives to it, then it's just a kind of a water pressure type.
So you can either increase the size of the pipe or you can reduce the amount of water in it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, actually, another way to think about that, Carl, is that in the case of water, presumably all the water has to come from A to B. But if we're talking about mobility of people and goods, there are a lot of ways that this happens where people drag large vehicles with them that take up roadway capacity. So there are more efficient and less efficient ways of using the existing transportation resources we have. And it's not quite like the water down the pipe, because we can move people and goods more efficiently if we want.
People tend to follow the path of least resistance in travel, and so like water, you know. And so that when I use that for traffic, it's certainly true if you're in a car. I think it's less true if you're walking or on a bus or something like that. So I share that just because it helps me think through some of these concepts as we talk about fewer lanes or more lanes or delineators versus not. It's really about flow and how many times you stop or how many speed bumps there are, that sort of thing. That'll dictate behavior after.
And are there any roadway projects in the general corridor that would pretty much encompass the university that would help alleviate some of that traffic? I mean, everybody does not have to necessarily use Providence, which is probably ingrained in there in their daily routine, but that's where they go. I mean, as an engineer, we can figure out ways to funnel traffic in other places by giving incentives. You say the path of least resistance. So what else is kind of in that corridor? Is there any other plans?
You know, one of those options in my mind was really the one that gets the neighborhood north to south, which no one likes. that's one sort of pressure relief approach, you know. Although I think most of the traffic on this section isn't really, I mean, obviously the neighborhood's using it now, but most of the traffic probably isn't from the neighborhood, it's others. So it's, I don't think there's a lot of space to do more corridors. You know, you've got College on one side or Rock Quarry, and you've got Providence, and then I guess Stadium is the next one, isn't it?
Yeah, so
it's partly it's our topography, and partly we don't have big pipes, you might say.
For the most part, four-lane facilities, the problems are not the pieces. It's the piece at the intersections that we have to deal with. It's the intersection that caused the flow to restrict. If we didn't have the signals, they'd blow right on through. But you got to maintain the signals. Grindstone Parkway, when they built that years ago, you know, we had an iPhone. We was on a little two-lane road. Well, we built that big road, but we never fixed the intersections. We still got the same problem at 63. They back up all the way over the hill to Grindstone, to that area. And so you have to work on the intersections to get the flow. And that's what we're trying to do.
You know, that can be complicated, too. If you can work on the intersections, and if you have difficulty at the intersection, I'm thinking primarily of 63 and Clark Lane. And in that case, then you never did improve the Clark Lane part of it, but you expanded the intersection, which drew more cars and actually made it more congested.
You can get across 70, but you can't get onto it very easily.
That's right.
Anyway, that's what, you know, that's the issues. The intersections become the problems.
And we're doing as much as we can in terms of the lighting coordination at the intersection to help the flow of traffic. That changes for the prime time, right?
Yes.
Seems to me that the incentives here that you were referring to are really avoidance of the congestion. That's the incentive that drives this whole thing. And if you can design,
I certainly try to avoid that. you're right. Yeah, it's a motivator, isn't it? Yeah.
Option six. It's a $1.5 million price tag for it. It would be a traffic signal at Burnham. This traffic signal would be removed at Rollins, so both the east and west side of the road would be served at Burnham. There are quite a few challenges to widening Burnham and then to widening Richland. We'd have to remove all the parking off of these streets, and based on the comments we received, this isn't a real popular option. Again, on the west side, we would have Birch Road improved, and then the improvements on Providence are the flexible yellow delineators to gain that right turn lane. Option number seven, signals at Rollins and at Burnham. This would split the traffic signal duties from the east and west sides at two intersections. In order to make the intersection at Rollins work efficiently, we would again have the one-way streets. And then there would be a traffic signal at Burnham that serves the west side. You'd have a residential feeder at Birch, and you'd also have the flexible yellow delineators on Providence. Option eight, signals at Turner and Burnham. And based on our 2008 interested parties meeting, or was it 2010? 2010 interested parties meeting. This is the option that, based on all the input that we had, that was the most favorable out of any of the options at the time. There was still a lot of opposition from the folks on the west side. The main things that the folks didn't like about this option were the flexible yellow delineators
and
the improvement of birch was something else that we couldn't get consensus on. But the option has a signal at Turner that serves the university side, and then it has a signal at Burnham that serves the west side. The signal would be removed at Rollins, and then I already mentioned the flexible yellow delineators, but $1.6 million was our estimate for this.
Is this project basically 1A?
1A.
Almost the same as 9, really.
1A and 1B. No. Option 9 has phase 1, which is 1A and 1B.
Oh, okay.
B, 1B has the new accessory road with the two houses being demolished.
It's 1A. Similar, except for I don't think either one of those had the flexible yellow delineators.
I mean, it's still a signal. It said Turner and Burnham. You're just
that
not
part
using
of it is similar. Mm-hmm.
The connector is not birch. It's taking down the houses.
But I think what we had on those options is an improved right turn lane between Stadium and Brandon instead of the flexible yellow delineators.
So one of the things I want to know, and are you establishing that if we put concrete between Brandon and Stadium to widen that bottom part, can we eliminate the delineators? Because
yeah,
that's what you're
that's
doing on 1A,
option.
On 1A and B, right?
Yeah. That's certainly an option.
Okay.
It probably wouldn't handle quite as much traffic, but it's an option. And the reason that I say it wouldn't handle quite as much is because the right turn lane would only go to Brandon instead
of... But that's in 1A and B. It only goes to Brandon, right? So it would handle as much traffic as you currently have configured for phase 1A and B, phase 1.
Yes.
And only at phase 2 do you extend it up farther, right?
Correct.
So only until you tear down the other six houses do you increase the capacity?
Correct.
Okay.
Another point, I think, in favor of what you're saying, Bob, is that pedestrian safety getting across Providence has been quoted as one of the three main purposes of these improvements. But as far as I can tell, options 1 through 8 do not improve pedestrian safety at all, and actually arguably reduce pedestrian safety, because what is currently just a left turn center lane will become a through lane, so there isn't even that refuge for pedestrians to wait when they're halfway across the street.
It doesn't help down at Kentucky, no, sir, but it does help at Burnham because we're putting in a signal and pedestrian signals there. We would be helping that.
On 6 through 8.
Yeah. So anytime we're putting a signal at Burnham, it is helping in that area. There will be pedestrian signals.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit, because at the moment they have to go to Rollins. They will only have to go as far as Burnham, and that is actually where a lot of the pedestrian traffic is, coming from the
fraternity
apartments, yeah, and the fraternity.
You're saying that if this were an option, you could extend that right-hand turn lane up to Brandon and then would not have to put those delineators in. We would still improve birch. Right.
And that's really
widen it in that area, but we would have the pedestrian safety. They would have birch, but they would still be able to make their left right in, right out, or make any turn out of the subdivision, right?
It would be safer for pedestrians. That's not pedestrian safety to stand in the middle of a two-way left turn.
We're not going to stop anybody with the yellow delineators either. If it's only 6 inches tall and you've got a space between them, they're going to stand out there on top of it.
I understand, but at some point we will have to do on this road what we're doing on College and tell the pedestrians where we want them to cross. That'll have to come.
But this kind of reminds me in a similar way of the kind of situation in which you can improve the intersection or close to it, but you're still having this rate limiting factor in between. And so unless you do something with that, you're really not solving the problem.
Now, most of the pedestrian traffic is, in fact, at Burnham, though, right? That's where the fraternity is.
Well, I mean, a high volume of pedestrians.
90%? That's where the residential living seems to be.
I see a lot crossing down between Kentucky and Burnham as well. There's a pedestrian walkway that goes between a lot of the Greek houses and parking lots.
There's a lot of workers people that live in this neighborhood that work at the university that cross down through there as well. It's not just students in that area. Down at the bottom where we saw them cross. But you're right, the students are up at Burnham.
But none of the configurations we've talked about will stop that. None of them.
Only in phase two of the nine option will stop that.
But how? Because you have a barrier.
Because you're going to put a barrier down the middle of it.
They can still,
at phase two.
Is it a barrier they can't walk across?
Sure.
Okay, we'll talk about
it. It'd be like that fence we're going to put on College in phase two of nine.
Any other discussion on option eight?
Why does that pedestrian or on College, how wide is that going to be?
10 foot.
How wide is it going to be?
Yes, yeah, so yeah. It's going to be 10 foot.
It'll be built within
with
a 10 foot
fence
area.
Down the middle of it.
Yeah, the median itself will probably be 6 to 8 feet wide. We'll leave a couple of feet buffer for the cars.
So one of the differences between the College project and this one is that there's not really the same kind of pressure on the longitudinal flow on College, so that center lane can be really devoted to either a pedestrian refuge or a pedestrian barrier.
I mean, for us, it's about safety of the pedestrian.
Option nine, this is the option that we had at the November 19th public hearing. This option is similar to option eight in that you have traffic signals at Turner and at Burnham. The signal at Turner serves the university side. The traffic signal at Burnham serves the west side. But this is the first option where we don't have the flexible yellow delineators. We still have the center turn lane, basically from Brandon all the way up towards Burnham. The access to Bingham is severed, and there is a new residential feeder that connects Bingham and Burnham with this option. So the reasons that we're able to get rid of the flexible yellow delineators is that we don't have the access at Bingham anymore. And then we also improve, we add a right turn lane in this option from Stadium to Brandon. So rather than having a right turn lane that goes all the way up to Bingham or to Burnham, in this option we take the right turn lane up to Brandon, which still gains us a lot of efficiency at the traffic signal. Now when the signal turns green, you'll be able to get, you know, a solid amount of traffic in both of those southbound through lanes. But once you get past Brandon, you'll still get a lot of queuing traffic. So at Brandon, in this scenario, is where the right turns would be cut off, and then they would start developing a queue back into this area.
Has anybody looked at, we just put in the new pedestrian island in front of Douglas High School. Is there anything similar to that that could also work in this area to give those people, because you're telling us that it's not only students in the lower half of this area, but it's residents that are walking across the street. Is there something similar to that that could go in between, say, Kentucky and Bingham to give a pedestrian refuge to maybe funnel that pedestrian traffic to where it's safe, to then cross over?
Sure, something like that could be looked at. And when we looked at this being a two-phase project, that's something that could be considered in the second phase. We would have that area, and we could construct some sort of a pedestrian haven in that space.
Well, even if we get rid of this option and go just to the Turner Burnham, the previous Turner Burnham signals, and then extend that right-hand turn lane up to Brandon, put more concrete in there. I mean, that's still something we could look at too, because we wouldn't have the delineators.
You're talking about the option eight?
Yes, the one that.
Option eight with the lane to Brandon.
Right, with the extension from Brandon to Stadium to add that capacity. And then somewhere between Bingham and Kentucky.
Yes, that would
be similar. To put some kind of pedestrian refuge there, because I don't imagine there's a lot of people making left-hand turns into Kentucky.
There's a substantial amount of traffic. Yeah, southbound left turns in Kentucky. There's a lot of people. There's a big parking garage right here by the hospital.
A lot of people sneak around to the hospital that way. That option were closed to them.
How do you stop that? Other than delineators?
How do you stop it?
You don't, right? So you're going to have a median or delineators to stop that left-turn traffic onto Kentucky?
No, you were going to stop that on all those options with delineators.
Correct.
Right, okay. So we can just put a median.
Well, but people would still have an alternative. They can come down to Providence, get on the stadium, and then take a left up Maryland and go back north to get to the parking garage. So, I mean, you could theoretically stop, you know, limit the access to Kentucky to put in that pedestrian safety island so that people can get back and forth across the street. And then cars are only going to go, what, a couple blocks out of their way.
That's why on a lot of these options where we're putting traffic signals in, there's dual southbound left turn lanes to either go on to Rollins, and then you'd have
two lanes.
They can
come up there and go
down
Maryland. Down
onto Tiger, and the other one could turn left.
Go south.
Scott, on this option 9, are left turns allowed in and out of Brandon?
No.
No. Okay. How are they stopped?
There's an island that would be constructed. Okay. So the island would channelize you to the right.
And then for this one, if the center, what is currently a center left turn lane, becomes essentially a median over an extended distance, you feel you have to block Bingham because you don't even want right turning traffic out of Bingham when there's only two lanes there?
Well, the reason that we take that out is with this particular option is because there's a connection to a street that's...
So if that connection wasn't there, is there a reason why Bingham couldn't still be right in, right out?
That, I think that is a possibility.
Okay.
I want to jump on top of Ian's comments there. What we have there is phase one and phase two. That's the first phase of what we voted for, right? And it was $3.2 million. Phase 1A of that was what we see there, minus the connector street and minus the removal of those two houses. So that an option that I don't believe we've really presented, and I think Mr. Beckett presented this option, was phase 1A with Birch Street as widened at $100,000 or something like that. Now, that's an option that accomplishes everything that phase one does in through traffic. Am I right about that? I mean, everything. Because the only difference is the connector street is not through those two demolished houses, but it's at Birch. So the question now is, who do we want to make mad? Because
that's always the question.
That's the Birch Street option accomplishes Birch Street option on top of 1A accomplishes the challenge of putting more traffic down southbound on Providence Road. It accomplishes that. It allows for left out onto Providence Road from Burnham. It restricts left in to grasslands in the same way 1A and 1B does. So 1A slash Birch accomplishes the same thing for those two problems.
So I've discussed that option with some grasslands residents, and the one issue was that people that live down in the southeast corner of the grasslands would only have the option of turning right out, or they would have to kind of backtrack to Birch. But the second comment after they noted that was, you kind of have to bend a little bit.
Right.
So that may not be such a burden.
And, you know, you could still use at Bingham, you wouldn't need the close off Bingham, right? You could put a right turn right in, right out. So for those people going south, you know, that would actually be not be a problem. And the number of houses, I would think, that would be funneled up through Birch, you know, I kind of eyeballed it around 80 houses, and they're only going up to Birch if they're going north on Providence Road. If they're coming out of grasslands and going south on Providence Road, they're going to do the right in, right out at Bingham and Brandon. Am I right? Right. So basically, 1A with Birch accomplishes everything that 1A and 1B does on Providence Road.
On Providence Road, The one thing that the citizens commented about when we didn't have the residential feeder in place was that there's no sidewalks on either side of Burnham. So they thought that peeling off the cars at the closest opportunity would take away some of the vehicular and pedestrian conflicts on Burnham.
But we also discussed the $1.5 million savings.
Mm-hmm.
Could build a lot of sidewalks.
Yes, and we gave you a report last February that discussed
a cost option
for a sidewalk on Burnham as well.
It was $300,000-$400,000. Was it that much?
About $250,000 for
right.
the sidewalk.
Right. So even you could add sidewalks.
Yes.
Divert traffic through Birch, signalize all the intersections, still put the right in, and still save money. And
yes.
Right. Because even 1A and 1B, or the whole thing we voted on, the $6.5 million package, didn't put sidewalks on Burnham, did it?
Didn't.
None of it did.
No.
So $3.2 million was the cost on this.
And two, if you had anybody down here off of Brandon and in that area of the subdivision, and we're not going to, and you had to make a right out at Bingham, but if we're not putting the delineators, you could still get in the left-hand turn lane and go to Kentucky back up north into, if you were going to downtown, rather than having to traverse through your entire neighborhood, go up Burnham.
There would be no left side at Bingham.
But you wouldn't come out, you would make a right. You would go right, and then you would backtrack up.
You'd have to go all the way to Stadium and turn left.
Or Kentucky, because we wouldn't have the delineators there. And so we would still have the center turn lane.
Well, I think
we're going to cut off Kentucky as a right.
Yeah, cut off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be all part of the deal, probably.
Okay.
MoDOT.
Which then would allow us to put that pedestrian safety on in somewhere in
right.
on there.
Maybe.
Basically, for pedestrian safety, there is really no difference between 1A and 1B,
no.
and 1A with Birch. And again,
that.
One of the things that I'm sort of mulling, trying to figure this out, anything we do, like if we did elect a 1A with Birch, doesn't preclude later, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, saying that's not adequate. We now need to go to 1B. We need to take out those two houses, put in the street, and then maybe 5 years later, taking out all eight houses. I mean, that's an incremental solution that, I mean, I believe you believe pretty strongly that we're headed that way.
I think you'll see that right turn lane creep north over time,
right.
just
but,
like it did on the south leg toward the south side.
But it gets down to the tired metaphor of I don't know how long the Motrin works before I need to have my knee replacement. But I want to try the Motrin first.
Could you also refresh our memory on what exact improvements would need to be done on Birch, how Birch will be affected?
Well, we'll have to rebuild that street because it's going to carry a lot more traffic. We'd have to rebuild the entire street. It would need to be widened to some extent for two-way traffic. Right now it's 17 feet wide, so we'd want it at least to be 20, 22 feet. We do have the right-of-way, but we will need easements off of those properties to tie their driveways back in and everything else. So,
does that include sidewalks?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. On just Birch.
On Birch.
Sure.
Now, you plan to do that anyway.
Pardon?
You plan to improve Birch anyway, don't you?
Not unless we're going to use Birch as the through street.
So if it's not a through street,
we wouldn't
you wouldn't do anything to it?
No.
Not much more than an alley right now.
Pardon?
Not much more than an alley right now.
No, that's all it is. And you know, if we take a trash truck through there or anything, we get complaints about it.
In fact, wasn't it recently paved? I mean, it wasn't so many years ago. It was gravel.
It'd be chip seal probably, if anything. But we just would be recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I seem to remember that it was gravel until the people on Birch complained about the dust. But I think it was an alley, wasn't it?
I don't recall.
It was a gravel street. That's how we came to have it, as they wanted it paved, from my reading of the history.
Going back to the Birch, just a real quick question.
Yeah.
The grasslands, and I'm sorry, I've driven through there numerous times, but I cannot remember. Are there sidewalks on both sides of the streets, or are there not sidewalks at all in most of the grasslands?
Most places, there are no sidewalks.
So why would we decide we're going to put sidewalks on that one little stretch of Birch when we could probably take less of an easement?
Oh.
This aerial's a little bit dated.
Right.
We do have this new pedestrian path that goes back to the MKT trail. And then there's also apartments that have been constructed on this track.
That's not going to affect Birch.
Okay.
We also have a street design policy that requires sidewalks.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going back to the subdivision down off of Scott that has the sidewalks on one side of the street. They're wider than normal, but...
That's not to say you all can't direct us to do differently.
Right.
But if we was designing it with, you know, we would put sidewalks on both sides.
That's kind of the sidewalks to nowhere argument.
Well,
No, what I'm saying is, I mean, as a policy matter, I mean, building sidewalks with the street, it's not an amenity. It's part of the streetscape.
Right.
The other thing would be, we're talking about building a sidewalk on the south side of Burnham, all the way back to Birch.
Right.
So then it would be connected.
It would tie to it.
Okay.
Or would it be better to have sidewalks on the north side of Burnham where all the students live?
No, because we're going to make them cross on the south side at the light.
One of the comments that's made frequently at neighborhood meetings is there is a concern. There are many folks who walk, and they want more sidewalks than they have now to begin with. So that's another.
That's, you know,
so
that,
any segment we can put in, I think, would
and
be
that's even
well.
That's a valid argument.
That's even a crime issue. I mean, if you get people out walking on the sidewalks and into the street instead of what is currently there, when there is no way to get out in the street, that actually positively affects the crime.
Because it reduces traffic
exactly.
With a sidewalk, because some people are not using their cars now; they're walking to campus if they work there. So that's a action too.
Yep, well said, Barbara.
So I guess the input I'm giving is any sidewalks you want to introduce, I think, would be welcomed by the neighborhood.
Final option, option 10, basically doesn't do anything for the east side or the west side or the pedestrian traffic. It's basically a vehicular only look at it. Extending the right turn lane from Stadium to Brandon would do quite a bit for the root cause of a lot of our woes back in this area. It's going to make this traffic signal more efficient, and hopefully the queues wouldn't be quite as long as they are today. We'd be able to get more traffic through this intersection, but it's $0.25 million for the cost on that.
But that's a feature. That's a feature that's shared in lots of these options. I mean, and that would be
right.
That would be an additive feature.
Right. Exactly. I guess the number 1 through 8, some of those didn't have it, but the ones we've really strongly considered all have that as a way of substantially increasing the flow, like the 9 out of 18 cars that we saw in that video that were turning right.
Yeah.
Would have much easier access.
This option is really from the philosophy of what's the most incremental step we could take.
Well, and that would extend the number of the length of time that you've been taking your Motrin.
Yeah. It might just be aspirin.
Or aspirin, yeah.
Rather than Motrin.
I actually like aspirin better.
Yeah, it's a good drug.
This is a pie chart of our results from the 2013 IP meeting that we had in March. Now, most of those early options 1 through 8, there wasn't a whole lot of support for. Starting here, there was 1%. You know, we even had 0% that liked some of those options. When we get up to option 8, that was the preferred at the 2010 IP meeting. We had almost 10% in favor of that option. The largest percentage of the respondents liked option 9, and then 20%. Liked option 10 the best. So those are the results from the last interested parties meeting.
You know, we're going to have questions here. We obviously can't act. I'm sort of interested in an informal poll going up and down here to say, look, if you were king, you know, how are you leaning? I mean, we're not going to vote on anything. And if you want to hedging is good, right? But if you want to hedge, go for it. But let's open up for questions, you know, first. And this gives you an opportunity for comments in addition to which way you're leaning.
Can we finish our slideshow? We
yeah.
have one more, I think.
All right.
before you head. So, you know, as staff, we try to foresee the future, try to look into the crystal ball and say, what do we see? And so, you know, the downtown continues to grow, the downtown continues to flourish, and so that brings more traffic through that intersection. We also have this area, which is the housing area, the married housing on the university that's going to redevelop. They're going to, university's going to do something with that someday. Probably be, you know, density will probably increase. They're looking at, you know, a convention center that's been talked about in this area, so that brings traffic through that intersection as well. They've moved the golf team out to Old Hawthorne, and they're building buildings out there for the golf team. So the golf course at some point at the university is going to be primary development acreage. Mm-hmm. And that's hundreds of acres, and that's going to go through this area. And so, and we're looking at Turner Avenue. There's old, you know, housing stock there that's going to redevelop. You know, we get conceptual views on that. And so this intersection is key to the city of Columbia in the future. And so what we do to it today, we need to enhance it because it's going to get continually worse as time goes on. And so we'll be happy to answer any questions then.
Questions? Let's go up and down the line with questions or comments. Does anybody, Michael, do you have any comments? If you prefer to tell me a preference.
Sure. I'm intrigued by the, what are you calling option 1A? The
1A birch. Slash birch?
Yeah, the birch where we keep everything the same except improved birch versus the feeder road. I've said this before, but we've got some new council members. I've kind of come to see the grasslands as an important historical asset in Toto. You know, those houses, it was a planned neighborhood that's historically important. It was the same landscape architecture firm and designers that did the Country Club neighborhood, the first planned neighborhood in America. And it's the whole, and you can see that it's, if you walk through it, that it's designed around the creek, it's designed around the topography. Those eight houses on Providence, I didn't really appreciate their value, but they were with forethought designed as to be the face of the grasslands. And so I'm more impressed by the need to protect those kinds of things. This gives us time. If we buy time, maybe we can address transport. Maybe we can shift away from car culture. Maybe we can reduce some demand if we can hold. I'm thinking about like the Erie Canal when they're buying up land and tearing people's houses, and then 20 years later the railroad comes and puts the canals out of business. I feel like the day after we tear down the eight houses, we'll get beyond car culture. And boy, people will look back at us, and because those, you know, 100 years from now, nothing we build now is still going to be here because we're building a junk. Those houses are still going to be intact and still valuable, and that's still going to be a neighborhood because they built for permanence, which is something that we're not doing anymore. So I think, you know, I'm leaning towards rescinding. I could live with just option 9 without phase 2. Because, you know, we did vote on it, and it does some things. But I think if we can do the birch option, I think that would be better. But I can't endorse phase 2 anymore. I would, you know, be okay with leaving it alone until we decide. But I won't ever vote to fund it because I've lost faith in that option until we have to. You know, if you need the knee, then you need the knee.
So, Carl, you have fresh eyes.
Yeah, but an old dog with fresh eyes. But yeah, I've been following this for some period of time, and I see this really, and I'm leaning as well toward that option, the one that you suggested, and the one that seems to make a lot of sense to me. Coming off an election that was characterized by neglect, I have a kind of a very parochial view of this. And there are needs every, I understand and appreciate that this is a central city corridor, so on. There was Scott Boulevard, which was important. There were Forum Boulevard. There are going to be other important intersections. But the Third Ward has important intersections, too, as does every other ward. This, to me, is all about this neglect idea, the equity idea, and the expense, needless to say, because this has been an expense creep. It started out with something less than $1 million, and now it was up to $6 or $7 million if you extend it out. And notwithstanding the issues with regard to the houses and the aesthetics of it, and including the delineators, which nobody seems to like, and although they might be inexpensive in some ways, They are ugly because they have to be replaced, and they are often not replaced as quickly as we would like. And that detracts from the whole thing. We also need to think about that pedestrian safety. And I really like the metaphors, aspirin or Motrin. I don't care which drug you use. But I think that that is probably the proper approach to take and see how this works first and see if those incentives work as well. So that's my inclination.
Laura, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I'll just make a few. I think you probably know where my position lies because I was the one that asked for this to be rescinded because I really believe that there are other options that can solve the problems that aren't as drastic as removing all of those homes. And I think we've kind of seen some of those play out today. I think, you know, with the option where we're going to use the Birch, the Turner-Burnham intersections, and, you know, we talk about putting in that sidewalk for Burnham, I think we've accomplished those three criteria that we set out forward. Do we completely accomplish the objectives? No, because really, quite frankly, we're trying to take a piece of roadway that was built, 80 years ago, and trying to put 2013 and traffic beyond in that area that there's just really not much space to move. So I think one of the things I would like to stress, too, as we move forward is to begin to take another look at that whole corridor and do some more long-range planning to see how we can maybe funnel some of that traffic away from Providence. If all those things are going to transpire at Convention Center and the redevelopment of the housing, we got to get ahead of that today and not wait for that to happen. And so I think now is the time to begin having those conversations with the university and other stakeholders about what are their future plans and how are we going to address this. And so, you know, I think some of the things we've talked about today with that Birch option are going to solve the problems temporarily. It's not a long-term fix. But I think I would much rather have the Birch option where we're not taking anybody's homes and properties than the option that was voted on where we're taking potentially 8 houses. And so that's kind of where I'm leaning today.
Ian?
Yes, I like that option as well. It seems to me that it addresses the left turn in and out hazard by moving all left turns to signalized intersections. It addresses the pedestrian crossing issue by creating a designated safe crossing location at Burnham, which is a little closer to Stadium than Rollins is. And it also, if I understand correctly, will create a pedestrian median, which could have gaps in it and could, in a phase two, have a pedestrian actuated, signalized a crossing that may be halfway between Burnham and Stadium. I don't know if there's a sort of a standard for how far it's reasonable to expect a pedestrian to walk out of their way to cross the street, but that would be an interesting piece of data to have. It does not do a lot to increase the capacity of Providence and address the congestion going longitudinally on Providence, and I'm fine with that because I'm going to introduce a term that I'm going to use a lot probably if similar issues come up called traffic demand management. And I don't agree that we should plan for 2% growth in traffic forever, even if the golf course is going to go away and is going to be developed, even if the university is going to attract more and more students. I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we do that, then we continue to expand our roads, and that brings more traffic. We can, as a council, decide that we want to manage the traffic demand on our system and use our resources more efficiently. You had a commentary about as the cars couldn't get into that right turn lane, and I do support running the right turn lane back to Brandon. That's a very low impact and significant benefit improvement. But you commented there's 1, 2, 3 car lengths there that are not being used, and that's true, that's inefficient. But it's not anything like the efficiency loss of comparing all of those large SUVs with one or maybe two people in versus just a few of those people traveling on a good bus that runs frequently or a carpooling program that uses our resources more efficiently and at much lower public cost. I would like to see more specific data on the backup problem. Scott and I were both out there on Friday afternoon counting cars, and I think you were doing your videography then. But I'd like to know, you know, specifically how many. You said then, Scott, that Friday is not such a bad day because a lot of the students leave town at lunchtime, that Wednesday and Thursday are bad days. So for how long specifically on the days when it does back up as far as Burnham or as far as Rollins or as far as Stewart, how long does it back up that for? Let's really get a handle on how many cars we're talking about that are creating the congestion and the delays, and how long does that delay people getting from Stewart to Stadium and on south after that, so that as we try different things, we can see whether they're having a beneficial or a non-beneficial effect. The one thing that doesn't seem to be addressed is, of all of the problems, is the cars of the houses that directly enter onto Providence backing out. And that is a dangerous situation. And I just wonder if there's a way that the city can offer to pour some concrete on those front yards to allow those owners or those residents to do a three-point turn and so they can come out forwards. I don't know. But that's the one thing that seems not to be addressed immediately that's a serious problem. So those are my thoughts.
Fred?
Well, we voted for option 9 the first time. And I appreciate that a few things have come up that we haven't really considered before, in particular the just extending the right-hand turn lane to Brandon from Stadium seems to be something that ought to be on the short list of any plan. So I appreciate the mayor's analogy of likening option 8 with that to option 9 phase 1. But my inclination is to stick with our original vote. There was a process. It's still option 9 is still the most popular by, you know, according to this last IP meeting, but it was popular otherwise, and I think my inclination would be to stick with it.
I have a couple of things. The first thing is one of the big issues for us reexamining this was the loss of those homes on Providence Road. There is nothing, even with rechanging this, that prevents those homes from being torn down at any time by the owners to make a green space, to put up apartments, whatever, because we don't have historic preservation policies in place. So I just want to say that for perspective, if we're really, truly interested in preserving those homes, something else has to be done. In terms of the option, I think the option 9-1A with the Birch alternative is something that certainly should be looked at. I'm interested in seeing how the public votes for that one. I know Grasslands is having a vote, and we'll get that. I don't think they're voting for that option, so I'm interested still in the Grasslands opinion on that, but it's certainly something to look at. And just for staff in the future and for council right now, I would like to refer everyone to the Downtown Charette recommendations. Page 39 talks about the gateways, specifically Providence, and what the recommendations are for that in terms of being a scenic gateway, and this is basically addressing the delineators. Also, page 29, make Providence Road a signature street by adding mediums, trees, street trees, safe pedestrian connections, and wayfinding signage, creating multiple downtown entrances. And then in appendix page 71, has a picture of a proposed Providence view, as well as page 82. And I agree with Ian that long-term, if we can get a viable transit system and looking at north, south, east, west routes, and lots of cities have buses stop at the intersection so you don't have to have a pull-out. Providence would be a great way to get pedestrians onto transit and out of their cars and reduce traffic. And then going back to the historic preservation of the houses on Providence, we need to have enforcement in our code so those houses don't go into hands of people who use them, let them run down, and then they make the argument for destruction. So that's the other part of historic preservation and code enforcement, if we're really, truly interested in preserving the houses on that corridor.
Well, I think it's all been said, and, you know, our decision Monday will be whether we rescind the November 19th ordinance or not. And then if we have a better option, we'll rescind it, give you a sense of what we want you to come back with, and then we'll have a second public hearing on that. So this is not over, but I think it will be a complete process when it's all over and done. So comments?
One other thing. What would you like to see Monday night? Do you want to see this presentation Monday night? What version, I guess, would be my question.
Well, I think you can start with what we voted on. Okay. I think you need to express that. And I think you probably ought to bring up any of the options that have been discussed tonight. I don't know that you need to bring up the 1 through 8, do we?
So would you like to see, no. see a change from 9 to 1A or whatever to have
Birch? Yeah, 1A with Birch and bring talk about phase 1 and phase 2. Bring it all together.
Okay.
It seems to me like the kind of the approach that we might want to take, certainly what we've discussed tonight and maybe the inclinations or the leanings of the council members. It also, I think the one that you originally voted on is fair game as well. And I think maybe taking some of these popularity contests into view in terms of some of those options might be the kinds of options, viable options and alternatives that folks would want to listen and hear more about before the decision's actually made.
I guess for me, it is wise and prudent to poll Grasslands residents. But as it was, we've all talked about, the stakeholders are the city, and the stakeholders are people who live in your ward,
yep.
who need some of that money for their own infrastructure improvements also. So it is, we're going to split the pie.
Now, there may be ways to increase the size of the pie, but that's another discussion.
Right. We're divvying up the pie right now.
That's right.
And one question I didn't ask that I think is relevant in all this is, what are MoDOT's plans for that road? At what point does traffic trigger MoDOT wanting to widen it, regardless of what we do at this point in time? So I'm interested in like the long-term MoDOT plans, and at what traffic points are those triggered, and how much input does the city have in framing what's done there?
Well, I think the city has a lot of input. MoDOT's here, so I won't speak for them, but, you know, traffic safety, pedestrian safety, those kind of things weigh heavily into what they do. But if they want to comment, they're here. Trent Brooks and Mike Shute from MoDOT are here.
Want to come up? Yeah.
Like John said, I'm Mike Shute, the area engineer for Boone County. As he said, obviously traffic volumes, safety of the pedestrians, safety of the traveling public in motorized vehicles or bikes, whatever, all those things are going to play an issue. But the fact of the matter is, we currently have no long-range plan to do anything to widen Providence Road. Whenever the public demands that we do something, that's when we will probably come to the table and say, we're going to have to do something. When that is, we don't know. You know, is it 2% growth? It just depends on how the city continues to grow. if we continue at that 2% growth and you can no longer get from point A to point B down Providence, people are going to come to us, the politicians are going to come to us, and y'all are going to come to us and say, we've got to do something with Providence Road. We don't have that plan right now. But obviously...
So there's no traffic volume that will trigger MoDOT intervention?
Well,
I mean,
they all go hand
from
in hand.
MoDOT's perspective.
Traffic volumes, as traffic volumes go get higher, your accidents will increase. So all those factors play into our decision-making process as we move forward.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, the last comment I'm going to make is that we're looking at a spectrum of solutions, right? And we're looking at minor incremental changes all the way up to phase two, which would require additional funding, which we don't have. And nobody knows if the decision we make, how long that'll stand. So it's very, very possible that the decision we make in the next month or so will be a not adequate and will be reviewed and overturned 10 years from now, 20 years from now. In fact, the solution of phase two may, in fact, be the solution that, in other words, 30 years from now, phase two may be what Providence Road looks like. It may not be, but...
We may get everybody into transit by that time. Yeah. They may not have to use
phase. That's a generation.
Can I ask a question before we wrap up? Can you talk about the money that goes away if we don't do a project?
We have STP funds, surface transportation funds that MoDOT passes to us. We currently have, it was $1.8 million, I believe it's up to $2 million now, of that type of money. We have to spend it within a certain time frame. We get about $350,000 annually. And so we have about $7,000 in jeopardy right now, which I think next year kicks in. So we have about $360,000 in jeopardy if I don't get it spent by December. So we will be looking at other projects, basically resurfacing projects to spend some of that money so we don't lose it. Things that I can get through the system very quickly. We can't design a road. We can't go out and build forum with it, but we can resurface some projects. So we will make sure we don't lose any money.
No one will shed any tears if we repave a street or two.
Or an airport.
Are sidewalks fair game for any of that? That's not concerning.
It take too much design.
I pledge to you that we will find a way for you to spend it.
I pledge to you we'll get it spent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Probably a double standard, but I don't mind saying.